Welcome to Modcast, a Civilization podcast focused on game modding. Rob, R8XFT.
Keith Angolan.
Jan Boruta.
Alpha Shard.
What we'll be doing today is we're going to be unleashing that whole bloody proverbial can of worms that is paid mods. Hey there guys, my name is Jess, also known as Teeth Angolan, and welcome to the Modcast, the Civilization 5 podcast centered around modding, content creation, and not actually playing the game because we're all too busy fluffing around in Photoshop and Notepad++. Just as some fair warning, this podcast will be available to download for $2.99, a bargain if you ask me. However, keep in mind that 75% of the profits will go on to fuel the fires in the bottomless pits of our empty, soulless hearts. 25% of the profits will actually go towards the restoration of our dignity. Anyway, joining me on the panel today is
Rob, R8XFT.
Alpha Shark. And John Narai, the Forgiven.
Who forgave you?
It's a long story. I could get into it, but it's really off topic.
Okay.
Now, as you may have guessed, today we'll be talking about the recent news wherein Steam has announced and implemented their plans for paid mods. And boy, if that isn't a bloody can of worms. For the most part, we'll be discussing the implications and the dilemmas that such a model presents, especially in relation to Civilization V. But before we continue, today on the Modcast, we have my Canadian partner in crime, and by partner, I probably mean a 75 to 25% split. He's the other guy behind Colonius Legacies, the non-pretentious, high-pitched voice one. So, Nirai, why don't you tell us a bit about yourself?
I didn't know there was going to be a grilling. I'm about to turn 30 years old. I just changed from being a professional construction guy in the dead-end drywall field into becoming a computer programmer, working for a small Canadian software company. Most of the interest that I have in Civ comes from the fact that I love video games. I love game design in general, and I've been modding, I think, since I was 10 years old, various different games tinkering around in the back. I would say that Civilization V probably has the best support for mods I've seen ever.
And that's a very rare sentiment. You'll never hear that again from anybody, ever.
If I compare it to, say, Command & Conquer Red Alert 2...
Absolutely, yeah.
There's no comparison. I think we're a little bit spoiled because when I say has the best mod support for games ever, I mean specifically for games that are not designed from the ground up to be a modding game, like Gary's Mod or Minecraft, where people came in and said, okay, what do we want to do? We want to build something that people can build mods for. I don't think that for Firaxis it was an afterthought, especially because I've listened to Kale's modcast. Talked about how during the development of Civilization V, there was some very strong movers and shakers. I really appreciate having the Steam Workshop set up for distribution, keeping mods updated. I think that's really excellent. Without Steam Workshop, because Civilization V is the first game that I've ever distributed mods on, I don't think I would have bothered to attempt to get any sort of popular support for any of my mods. The Civ Fanatics has a lot of support for mods, but Steam Workshop is just incredible for being able to set these things out in an attractive manner and make them accessible. Definitely kudos to Valve on that. As well, my wife and I are expecting our first child. It's been a little bit difficult to keep on top of the modding scene as of late, but it looks like the next three of First Nations mods are going pretty well. The Wabanaki are starting to get art thanks to Rob, and I think we've got most of the art assets together for the Anishinaabe.
Since we've been talking about some of the First Nations mods, what sort of inspired you to go down the path of creating First Nations such as the Cree, and what sort of decided what sort of civilizations or cultures of the First Nations that you wanted to work on first?
The term First Nation actually comes from the Bouhis, Canadian, and the people that were here before, treaties. They're the First Nation treaties, therefore you are the First Nations, which is really in some ways a terrible term, but that's the one that is the politically correct thing to say. Really the greatest motivator, I think, for the First Nations mods, or at least the way that we put them out, is Luigi. He had this thing going when I first started doing mods in Civilization where he was working his way up from the south in South America, doing all of the nations in South America, Argentina, Chile, Gran Colombia. But as he would move down the map, if he ran into a nation that did not exist on political maps today but was a major power sometime in history, he would stop and make that civilization as well. And when I first started Civilization modding with T-Pang, and even on my own stuff, I was looking at it from this perspective of saying, where can I go on the map? And I got a copy of Hamasubi's World According to Civ Modding map, and I looked at that and saw that there were all these areas where people were working. JFD was really big in Europe. There were a number of people in Asia working. North America was a big open space in terms of coverage. So I figured, hey, why don't I start in Northern America and move my way down towards Liuji and sort of meet in the middle. It is a fairly monumental and risky task to take people that are culturally significant and had a way of life and then distill them down into a unit and a building and a leaderhead and a color scheme. And try not to...
Jesus Christ, what was this sick
suck all the life out of them.
We started off with AI changes, and then we're up to where we are now. Where are we up to now with Civ 5 is we have to include, you know, everything from those leader heads in all of those events and decisions to support. And then Civ 6 will just be another whole can of worms. That's the phrase of the day, by the way.
Because Canada is one big nationality, bam, we've got Canada. You could basically go Canada, U.S., Mexico, and we sort of did that. And then maybe Panama and Guatemala, and then you'd be done, unless you want to move into the Caribbean. But what I ended up actually doing was taking Canada and building kind of a map of Canada and saying, what are the major people here that were here for, Liuji style, before I move on to America? So sort of in my game plan, if you will, it was to do Canada, and then do pre-American America.
Yeah.
And then move south to Mexico. And then eventually, by that time, I would have assumed that Liuji had finished South America and was taking on the Caribbean, which he has been doing.
Interesting that you noted that we started off doing the post-colonial nations first. And I noticed that when we were doing Canada and when we were doing Australia, there was a lot of comments saying that how dare you make Canada or how dare you make America when, you know, they have a short history, there's nothing to be proud about, they're that sort of people. But we didn't really allude to anything that was pre-Canadian or pre-Australian. But essentially, that's what we kind of decided to do. We decided to focus on Canada, and then we wanted to go back in time, just give kind of the best of both worlds as opposed
Absolutely.
To Canada. We try to keep it French-Canadian, British-Canadian. Essentially, give the First Nations the representation. You know, you hear a lot about Native Americans, but the limelight isn't really focused too squarely on the First Nations civs. Like, not many people have heard of the Diné, but now you have up to the point where, if I'm looking at the Diné theme page at the moment, 31,000 people have seen, and, you know, over 12,000 people are actively playing it. And you can pretty much guarantee that a lot of these people didn't know that the Diné sort of existed before.
I'm very surprised that nobody's put together a Native American mod for Civ 5 with all the Civs that's available now.
As in like a mod compilation?
Well, you know, it seems to be something that lacks in Civ 5 in terms of modding. I mean, certainly in the previous mods, scenarios were quite a big thing. And, you know, in those particular versions, you'd love someone to come along and make, you know, all the different First Nations.
The problem with doing, say, 6 to 8 mods of First Nation people in Canada is that if we were just doing one, there would be a lot of leeway to confuse people how they dressed or what they did, because you could say, well, we're covering a large area, but when you're doing the Wabanaki and you're doing the Anishinaabe and they're next door neighbors and different cultural groups, you have to be a little careful about whether you can give Anishinaabe or even worse, say, Eastern people like the Diné, give the Diné's clothing to the Wabanaki, and people will start pointing out this is confusing.
A lot of the times, for example, the Diné and the Cree, they're right next to each other and they were at odds. And, you know, the Cree and the Blackfoot, they were at odds. And the Blackfoot and the Sioux, they were at odds. And, you know, same thing with the Anishinaabe and the Wabanaki. A scenario would be interesting, especially, you know, with Conquest of the New World. That was a very interesting scenario by Firaxis. But there's also the fact that a lot of the times these civilizations, although they were at odds at some point of history, they all weren't really present at once. They didn't reach their peaks of dominance pretty much at the same time.
That was a little bit of a contentious point, because most of the First Nations did not keep written histories of any kind. And this is one of the difficulties with building a First Nation civilizations. Now, part of this is the old Canadian government's fault, because the Canadian science anthropologists had a very condescending attitude towards oral history. Especially if it's mixed with legend, then they kind of tend to throw it out altogether. And so, as a result, much of the history of First Nations peoples does not exist in any sort of written form or whatever until the point when white men arrive. So you go from once upon a time, there were these people, they were happy, it was great, and they had, bam, horses, white men, guns. One of the ones I will say is most challenging that's upcoming as a teaser. We're doing the Beothuk people of Newfoundland, and literally, white people made first contact with them, and then within the next 2 years, they went extinct. So we've got a people group that are fascinating. They managed to get their hands on European technology without having contact with Europeans, which makes for a fascinating study in technology.
A lot of people, cultures sometimes that we put out, they said, you know, these civilizations or these mods that you're doing aren't really worthy of civilization. Sometimes they said these cultures are not worthy, that, you know, there's so many other sort of civilizations that we can make. But I think the philosophy behind Colonial Legacy Civilizations is that we're trying to educate people in simultaneously and dynamic play experiences, but we're also telling those stories that are kind of worth telling. Because, like, you have to sit back and really appreciate the stories out there. The whole sort of history is stranger than fiction.
On the one hand, to go off of that as a theme, the First Nations were almost to a people nomadic or semi-nomadic. Very few of them built lasting structures. It's really difficult. I usually like to have 36 cities in my city list.
Same here.
It's very hard to come up with a 36 city list on a people that never built a single city. How do you get 36 cities out of a civilization that doesn't ever have one?
I'll tell you what I've done in the past, struggling for the last few names, is just looked on the map where they are now, sort of toddled in some sort of unusual backwater place that does exist, but probably people don't know much about.
For the creases, how many cities did we end up going for that? There was, over 70 cities, because there were six different Cree nations who we ended up going with. And it made the game really dynamic in a way, but I can only really sort of imagine sort of the pressure we put on Paul Reese, so, or maybe he enjoys that, maybe he's masochistic in that way.
From a perspective of the game civilization, where it evolved around this idea that the Egyptians and the Greeks and the Romans built structures that lasted forever, and we want to play a game where you get to build these great cities, and you can build the wonders from these cities, like the Parthenon or the Great Pyramids. And then you come to Canada, and you go to Blackfoot, who had a dynamic culture. They were highly advanced. Some of the technologies in the technology tree, things like guilds, things like civil services, were dynamic parts of the Blackfoot culture by the time the Europeans found them, the French and the British, yet they didn't build these wonders that you can point at. They didn't build cities. They tended to move around. One of the things that I'm really happy about with the mods has been the ability to focus on people like the Dene. The Dene are definitely the one that everybody will come up to me and say, I love, which is really great to see. A lot of Canadians don't even know that the Dene exist. But when you suddenly look at the language map of the Dene languages, you suddenly look and say, oh, something had to have happened there.
I like the Dene as well. I think it's really the thematics behind it. There's a very sort of musical theme behind it, and when a civ has thematics and you can get really immersed in what it does, that's what I'm really proud of with that civilization. A lot of modders don't really realize the impact that the musical score can have on the game. For example, when I go and play as Mexico, I hear the Mexican theme that just pumps me up like, man, I'm going to play the entire game as Mexico. This is great. This sounds great.
Music is always really good. A challenge. I think we nailed it with the Dene. When I started out building this First Nations mods, I kind of took Canada as a map and said, okay, I want somebody over here, and I want somebody over here. Let's get some Eastern people from the Maritimes. Let's get some people from around the Great Lakes. Let's go into Northern Quebec, the area between Ontario and Alberta, which is where I'm from. The city that I live in, which is Edmonton in Alberta, is actually on the divide between the Cree land and the Blackfoot land.
When we posted the Blackfoot leader, some people thought they were quite offended by his clothing choices.
I posted the Blackfoot and had people who were complaining that the Blackfoot isn't what they should be called. They should be called the Blackfeet. And
all right, yes, that's right.
The sad part about that is that the Blackfoot and the Blackfeet are not the same people.
Well, the Blackfeet's a subset of the Blackfoot, right?
That's correct. Whether or not they were a troll, somebody being upset because Blackfoot and Blackfeet are not being used interchangeably or in the right way is fairly disheartening.
Yeah.
Because you would hope, I would hope at least, that if you were a member of either the Blackfoot or the Blackfeet, you would know the difference.
Right. if you remember the Blackfoot or the Blackfeet, would you want a Civ mod of your tribe in there, a bit like the Tuavlan?
That's another can of worms that we probably haven't approached. I don't know. It might be an interesting one.
Only all legacies out there that we don't know about because they can't get onto the internet. But it's a new.
We have seen some comments. Marbazier recently did a playthrough of the Kree, and there have been some Kree members saying, wow, this is a great mod, and, you know, likewise with the Blackfoot and the Dene. There's some comments saying, oh, wow, this is, you know, my people are from here, and this is great that you've made a mod, but also at the same time, we didn't really consult councils. But mind you, we're not really monetizing this either.
Yeah. It's certainly more thorough than we were back in the Civ 3 days, because when we did the Native American mod back then, we just did, like, maybe a couple of dozen of very generic-looking but very different Civs.
What's the civilization iteration that had the Native American civilization, that one giant civilization?
In Civ 4.
Oh, God.
Well, and Civ 5 isn't that much better. Although they, in Brave New World, they did change to having the Shoshone as well. But one of the things that I decided to not do, but was tempted to do, was to remove Hiawatha from the Iroquois, where he does not belong. He's actually a Wabanaki.
Oh.
Put him as the leader of the Wabanaki and build a new Iroquois leaderhead and go from there, which would be a very JFD thing to do. But, you know, I looked into it, and I couldn't find a very adequate Iroquois leader at the time that I was planning.
It's kind of interesting, because, you know, the Iroquois is quite well known. You kind of expect that there would be a decent sort of leader.
Well, I think that, to be blunt, Firaxis or 2K Games was hoping to have a leader for the Iroquois that kind of had a spiritual or mystical quality to make it interesting. Perhaps I should rag on Firaxis here for a moment. Take note. Everybody gets romantic about First Nations is the whole concept of spirituality or cultural, the mystical elements, so on and so forth. And the Dene embody that as a culture. So without having to kind of steer them into a direction that's really not historically accurate, we were able to build a deep culture.
It's also kind of interesting when we look at design within Colonius Legacies, our own personal biases always kind of shine through. You can see kind of overlaps with the designs. There's a lot of cultural defensive mods. That's my playstyle, though.
Now, one of the things I've tried to do is build playstyles that are not the way that I play. I have a tendency to play the standard classic three cities, go Liberty, get the extra settlers for free, the workers for free, build four workers, three settlers, drop those cities, play that way for the rest of the game. I play in such a rut that I actually try to build mods that will push me out of my comfort zone. Whether or not I succeed is questionable.
But the question is, really, for you and also for you, Jack, when you're actually playtesting your own Civs, how much do you actually try and do different styles? The reason I ask is that with my own modding, people would comment on it and say, oh, this isn't right, this doesn't quite feel right, for example. People who play completely differently to me, and have only really considered the way I play.
Well, when I go to playtest the mods, the brunt of the mods that are in Colonius Legacies have been sort of marked by my sort of tick of approval, and I've essentially designed most of them. I have sort of a very similar mindset to Nero when I design them, so I want to basically force myself out of a particular playstyle and make other people play different things. And when I go to play a civilization that I've designed, I kind of have to use that mindset and kind of step outside my own sort of boundaries. The Blackfoot and the Kree, they're sort of focused around warmongering, and they have some very sort of suitable benefits towards that.
The Beothic, for example, here's a teaser for you. They get archaeology at the beginning of the game, not the entire technology. They can't build archaeologists until they actually research archaeology, but they can see antiquity sites from the beginning of the game. If their cities work those antiquity sites, they gain a boost to science and productivity. Of course, archaeological sites don't appear at the beginning of the game. There are some prerequisites. There have to be combats or ruins or destroyed cities for them to appear. So as you're going to be playing the Beothuk, if you discover ruins, for example, bam, all of a sudden you're going to see an archaeological dig site, and you're going to want to get that dig site. So you're going to have to find some way to get that dig site to you, or rather you to the dig site. So you're going to see them as a fairly forward-settling or weird-place-settling culture, which is sadly not really how the Beothic were, because they were very reserved and then they died out. Although we don't really know that, because we met them at the twilight of their culture, the eternal conflict with portraying people in a mod. At the same time, the mod has to be fun to play. And unfortunately, that's the truth of it. You can take people, and you are going to end up painting a caricature of them in some ways by making them into gameplay mechanics. So the struggle has been, how do I not portray the Beothuk as a highly aggressive team, because they aren't, while simultaneously showing the great things about the Beothuk culture? They may lend themselves to a highly aggressive playstyle. Potentially, you're going to want to go out and kill people to get the antiquities to spawn, so that you can then build your cities on top of the corpses of your enemies, which is where the antiquities spawn. And I may have to redesign them if that becomes the thing that everybody does.
They don't want the same thing that happened to Gandhi to happen to them.
The Anishinaabe are like a snapshot of, say, 20 years of Anishinaabe history, which is not how the Anishinaabe typically are.
No.
And so it's going to be interesting to see how that's received, but they're also an incredibly hostile and aggressive civilization. To just kind of give you a sneak peek behind the scenes, their unique ability allows them to remove the defenses of any city that they are fighting against during the first, on standard difficulty, 10 turns of any war. And specifically, in addition to that, their Midiu, which is a religious missionary inquisitor-style unit, it replaces the Inquisitor because those are more expensive, has the ability to turn neutral city-states to go to war against enemies that you're at war with.
I like it.
So, if you combine those two abilities, you can actually sit back in your own city and cause other people to go to war with your opponents, and then take down those opponent defenses while your troops are sitting at home defending your lands. Your allies, or the city-states that you've coerced into battle with you, can mop the floor with your opponents while you don't
actually... Yeah, that was the mindset that we had going into designing the Anishinaabe. We wanted to implement proxy wars, because proxy wars are the most fun thing ever. That's something we definitely wanted to recreate.
Yeah.
Now, city-states are not all that great at fighting, I've found.
Well, you have to, you know, donate a lot of units to them, but proxy wars are definitely fun.
Yes, you're going to have to actually keep sending the Midiu to the city-states to keep them infuriated, which is maybe more micromanaging that players want to do, but in general, I actually think it's not bad, because then you actually have to spend a lot of faith to keep all the city-states fighting for you. Alternatively, of course, you can just ally with them by spending lots of gold and lots of time making them happy, and that'll work.
Something to spend faith on, though, isn't it?
Yep. I suppose while I'm teasing everybody, I should mention the Wabanaki. I've tried to build a civilization that doesn't really care about borders. They'll be able to go over the map capturing luxury resources all over the place.
Belgium do that, don't they?
They do that. And when I found out, I thought, oh, maybe I should redesign the Wabanaki, and it's possible that this will happen. Many of the civilizations that we do are group civilizations. Instead of picking, say, a specific tribe, the Blackfoot are actually the Blackfoot Confederacy.
Yes.
About 20 major tribes, and who knows how many minor tribes. The Cree have countless tribes. The Anishinaabe that we're doing, three major large tribes. The Ojibwa, the
Algonquin,
the Ottawa, and then there's the Potawatomi. The Wabanaki are also a large group. Even if I were even just to focus on all the major tribes of Canada, I'd have probably 100 mods to write, and that's not going to happen, sadly. So that means that, unfortunately, I have to gloss over a number of groups that are really worth taking a look at some point.
You can have, essentially, a choose-your-own-adventure. You can draw the dots between two mods. You can basically connect every single mod and every single Firaxis civilization towards each other due to the relationship that they've had with each other.
I think one of the areas that we're woefully underrepresented in, I think that we can plunge a good year into Native America. I've been really glad to see that people like Tomatek and Sukratak have put out the Chinook and the Sioux. Those are incredible mods. They do great justice to the Native American peoples. I may plunge into the United States when I finish up the 8 Canadian First Nations that we're building.
Do you have any sort of what you're thinking of? You know, Navajo?
Cherokee are definitely on that list. The Apache. I'll have to do more research. For me, specifically, Civilization 5 modding and the First Nations, I am whiter than white bread. This has all been about almost a journey of myself, of overcoming racial hang-ups, racial hatreds, if you will. I've never really been full of racial hate per se, but my upbringing has kind of had a racial disdain for First Nations. And so going through these mods and researching and finding out how fascinating and amazing these groups are, it's a thing that's near to me. And motivating people to help people that are unlike themselves, I think, is a fundamentally good thing.
I think it would be a very good time to open that proverbial can of worms that is paid mods, the implications and dilemmas that kind of brings up. But I think what we should do first is kind of compare the different beasts that Civilization V and The Elder Scrolls V.
EA Games has had paid mods for Sims, but there is a point about quality of pay somebody to do something, they will possibly work harder at it, make better quality, and I think that was the basic idea behind this.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's doing this for a living rather than just a hobby, maybe they'll do more and get more detailed on it.
Like with a lot of things, especially, you know, political ideologies, the concept is really good on paper, but the execution is not the best thing in the world.
Right.
It's one of those things where you look at, yeah, okay, let's incentivize modders to create quality stuff, and we're going to incentivize them with the revenue. I think it's something we should look at, though.
Yeah.
Do we see a model such as this working in Civilization V? And we've mentioned this before in other podcasts and the other modcasts, that comparative to the amount of players, the amount of modders to the amount of modded consumers is really low in Civilization V. There are not many Civilization V modders out there at all. They're probably, in terms of like those people who mod custom civilizations, they're the largest group. Other than that, there's really not that many Civilization V modders.
I think as well, a lot of our Civ mods, you're seeing a lot of people working on each other's mods. You know, we put a mod out, it's not, I made a mod. It's the seven of us got together and built a mod.
And if you look at the Inuit, that's a mod in which, you know, over 15 to 20 different people contributed to it. Or even if you look at the music in that, because the music isn't ours. You imagine how many people contributed to that music. So, you know, you're having dozens and dozens of people contributing to one particular project. And so I can just not see this model working in Civilization V whatsoever. You can't monetize Civ 5 mods because it just contains contributions from just so many different people.
If you imagine my project, Anno Domini.
Exactly.
That's a case in point, isn't it? Because essentially in Anno Domini, I've done all the Anno Domini work, but I've taken working contributions from so many different people. Would somebody like Jan, who's done loads of leader heads for me, he'd be contributed the same as some guy who did one icon?
Jan definitely wanted to talk about this, and I think it definitely can be an ongoing conversation.
JFD does monetize his mods through donations. Now, whether or not he ever actually gets donations is another question altogether.
Well, I can answer that question. He said that he has had only two donations in the year that he's had his PayPal donation links up. It's a very nice sentiment that he sees all the time, where people say, oh, I would totally donate to these modders, and then JFD kind of comes in and says, well, you'd say that, but I've only received two donations in the past 2 years, and, you know, it's a very justifiable statement to make, because
yes.
The quality of his civilizations are just...
Oh, he is intimidatingly powerful in civilization quality.
And, like, the unfortunate thing is if, say, Colonius Legacies, or we decided to monetize, because we have that foothold within the community, we would probably receive donations at a higher rate of it when we don't necessarily deserve them over the people that really do. So that's one of my sort of apprehensions as to why I would never want to monetize any of those mods that we create.
I've got a fun set of perspectives. To drag this kicking and screaming back into the First Nations discussion for a moment, Canada has an obsession with First Nations culture and promoting that through tax dollars. And one of the things that I could have done very early on and considered doing but quickly discarded is I can actually get federal tax money grants for the promotion of Canadian culture and the promotion of Canadian First Nations cultures. I have no idea how much. I know it's happened before. Rob was saying back in Civilization III this happened. And I chose not to because I didn't want to have to go through the whole ruckus, if you will, of having the government sort of looking over my shoulder when I'm building these mods. Prices. Let's say I decided that building a civilization mod should net me approximately $200. It's mostly pocket change, but, you know, it would allow me to sort of capitalize on the time that I lost to build the mod, because I've probably put about 100 hours into every mod, maybe. Now, to do that, let's say that I decide that a mod should average 20,000 downloads. Let's say I levy a penny for every download. If that happens, then I'll get it to $100, but then all of a sudden, what about T-Pain? What about our artists? What I do, coding and design work, is less of a thing, I would say, than art. Say I decide that we give T-Pain a cent, we give me a cent, we give Jan 5 cents, we give all the other contributors a cent, and suddenly we're looking at, you know, 15 cents behind the scenes, but then that's an additional 60 cents for Firaxis, and it begins to just spiral out of control. If I was going to monetize mods, I believe I would probably actually want to do it voluntarily in some sort of like a Patreon system.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's something that I think we should definitely discuss as a community. If a paid scheme comes this way, can expect a lot of people monetizing their mods. It's going to be a bandwagon, and a lot of these mods are probably going to take already existing mods, prove on them a tiny bit, and then monetize them. And then it goes into a whole sort of theft of ideas. The best thing I think we can do as a community is if we all simultaneously set up sort of Patreon sort of style accounts, that could be a definite sort of counter. Because I was reading that everybody who put a donate button on their Steam Workshop page was getting censored and getting deleted.
Well, you could do something very much like, have you come across a game called Naught AD at all? Which is a community
game. Oh, right.
Game.
Yes.
Now, I came across that recently, and it's very nice, obviously, and interesting in that era, but they basically have a terms and conditions which says, look, you're welcome to download this. This is absolutely free, and you're welcome to change it any way you want and, you know, put it back on. However, download from here, you download it for free, but then you give it away for free. You don't make any money on it, and that's the terms and conditions of having this mod.
W. Howard does the exact same thing on his Pig and Mix Mods website, but I don't know. When it comes to paid mods, I just actually don't think that it could work. There are so many different, even legal sort of things. It's a terrible idea.
Forget all the payment side just for a moment and just think about the actual mechanics. And again, this is going from my own experience with my own modding. Let's say, for example, I'm creating my mod and I'm using different elements of paid mods or want to within it. I know there's all the things that are saying, well, you know, you don't have to pay for your mod, but you'd be quite annoyed if I gave away your lead head for nothing when you're getting X amount from being downloaded. So the other thing you could do is make it, inverted commas, I guess, an expansion pack or a need. You need to pay for this in order to play my mod, which is kind of fair enough. If I were referencing your mods, but these are paid mods, say Colonial Legacies is a download that one would pay for, then the only way I could use them technically in my mod is to say, right, well, I can't give them away for free, so you will have to pay for and download Colonial Legacies pack in order to play my mod. Now, going back to particularly in the earlier days of Civ 5, the biggest complaint about Anno Domini is that it used all the different DLC. People saying, well, I can't play that because I haven't got such and such a pack, or I haven't bothered buying that expansion pack, so I can't play it. And you should make kits so you can do it without that, which you don't want to do. So imagine the nightmare of saying, right, well, in order to play on a Domini, you need to pay for and download 20 mods.
Well, these are, yeah, exactly.
You know, just make it so that people wouldn't want to play it.
That issue does come up with other games like The Sims. If somebody made a mod, but they used all these expansion packs that you didn't buy, then you can't use that mod. So it's exactly like you're saying.
Case in point with pretty much most civilizations that are released today, they all require Gods and Kings and Brave New Worlds. And you always see those seldom Steam Workshop comments saying, can you please remake this for Gods and Kings or Vanilla, because I don't have Brave New World and I don't have Gods and Kings.
Go out and buy it.
Yeah, go ahead and buy it. Why doesn't that the argument? Do we have to ask ourselves why doesn't that argument scale up?
You know, it just annoys me just as an aside, because again, creating my own mod, people say, no, well, I can't use it. You should have made it for this. You should have done this. Well, go out and make your own mod or buy the game. If you're saying that you're the biggest Civilization fan, you haven't got the expansion pack, then are you?
Realistically, the answer becomes because all of those things add functionality, and if we didn't have those, all of our mods would be very much the same.
But I think where you're coming to here, sorry to interrupt you, so does events and decisions. You know,
right.
You mentioned the comic yourself. How can you play without that now?
It is great. And I mean, if there's any mod that I would just support the idea of it being for pay, in my opinion, is essentially an expansion pack all on its own. There's a ton of work into that. There's a ton of functionality, and it makes the game so much more dynamic that if you were going to put a $20 fee, I would pay that $20. I don't know, it's impossible to measure, but how many copies of Brave New World and Gods and Kings have been sold by the modding community?
No.
It's hard to say. There's no way to measure it.
Because even with my own little mod, people who have complained, there's been an equal number of people saying, do you know what, because of this, so I could play it, I actually went out and bought such and such, and I went out and bought such and such, and even for your mod, but they're quite good on their own. So it's almost like some of the DLC increased in value because all of a sudden, instead of just being able to play as the Inca or whoever, you can play all these other mods if you get it. Let's say Jan, as an artist, said, right, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to supply pack with, let's say, 10 leader heads, a couple of dozen brand new shiny icons, and this, that, and the other, because I am a paid artist.
That's a very, very interesting proposal.
Yeah, because the thing that annoys me sometimes, I think annoy is probably a little bit strong, really, but it's just a bit irritating. Sometimes Jan creates art for people, which is great, and then they don't release the mods for about, well, in some cases, it's 2 years we've been waiting for one of them, and it's like, well, I can't use that art and that stuff until they've actually released it. Whereas if he said, right, well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to create a few leader heads that everyone can use, and I'm going to put them on Steam, and if you want to use them, you buy it for X amount, but also you need to reference that if you're playing the mod. That would be fine. Then everyone gets an opportunity to use it if they wish.
With what you were just saying there, Rob, one of the issues with, say, working on Patreon is that, say, I want you to give me money every time I build a sieve, and it's a great system for, say, music, but the fact is that every time I make a sieve is a real misnomer, especially when you're talking about art. Every time I make a leader head is much more of a good diagnostic, but that's not a tangible result for somebody who's looking at your Patreon stream. For me, every time I finish debugging the Lua, I get cash. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a single thing. And for somebody like Jan, again, who is a paid artist, really, you almost want the reward to kick in every time he builds a leader head.
The point in which such a model does come to Civilization V, and I really hope that it doesn't. But
I agree.
I really hope that it doesn't.
The other issue, really, when Jan
builds this
a leader head,
I was gonna say,
it's amazing. But if I put out a mod, and you pay me, say, a dollar for it, and then that mod is buggy, because they are.
Yeah.
Are you getting the shaft? Is there an incentive for me to go back and fix the bugs?
Yeah.
Or am I going to sit here and say, I'm working on the next one?
Exactly. When people purchase anything, they feel a sense of entitlement. And you know what? They rightfully should, especially when it comes to major video games. So essentially what's happening is it splits the community into those who love mods and consume mods and understand that modders are human. For those who feel entitled and whine that their mod doesn't work or that the developers have brought out a patch to which it subsequently breaks the game, that means that the modder essentially has to fix it and have a flurry of people always looking over their shoulder, otherwise they will face adverse amounts of vitriol. It's not a fun thing.
You get people commenting and clowning the legacy saying, well, you know, if you do that, I'm not going to buy it. But if you do Pocahontas, that's what I'm going to pay for. And then you get people that just want civilizations that or leaders that are well known because of popular culture, whatever. And you don't get people who are interested in, you know, you're interested in.
I think that was like the hallmark of what we decided to do with Lonious Legacies. We started doing Australia and Canada because that was a kind of our foot in the door thing. And then we decided to go through to stuff like the Philippines, the Boers, the Diné, the Blackfoot, because we had that soapbox where we could, you know, educate people and sort of introduce people to new creeds and cultures and give them stories worth telling.
This is actually very relevant. One of the things that has been mildly, you know, a question to ask is, when we built the Diné especially, and the Cree and the Blackfoot as well, the download count for the Diné suffered quite badly from obscurity. I mean, now
initially,
people have played it, and they've loved it, and they've come back and played it, and they've recommended it to their friends, and...
But they recommended it because it was free, possibly, as well.
Well, that's, because of obscurity, they would have never touched it.
Taking away the excellent job that you did, putting that to one side for a moment, obscurity is the key word you use there. So how many of those people said, do you know what, I'll give it a chance, I'll pay my $1, $2, whatever it is, and then I'll spur my other friends on to pay $1, $2 for a sip never heard of?
But if we go to a paid model, then downloads becomes everything. And so then that's the end of us looking at First Nations. Nobody cares about the frictions in a terms of, I'm not going to get a $1,000 check in the mail if I stick with the First Nations. And there becomes the slippery slope.
Yeah. Whenever we release a Colonius Legacy Civilization, every other Colonius Legacy Civilization goes up by 1.5k downloads because they saw the quality of that mod. Essentially, it's those people who go to search for other Colonius Legacy Civs, like Australia or Canada, and they see, oh, wow, these Civs are great, let's download all the other ones. So they could do that, and it's free. But if Near Eyes is saying, is if we do introduce a paid model, if that ever came to it, because I don't think it will. But if it did come to it, that means those civilizations in which we were to go to promote them, well, nobody would want to pay for a civilization they've never heard about.
And no offense intended to JFD, I think he's done a great job of this, but you're going to see a lot of low-hanging fruit mods as well. Let's all do Nazi Germany. And again, I'm not attempting to be insulting. I think that JFD's Nazi Germany is one of the best Nazi Germanies because it doesn't just go, we're evil. It focuses on science. It focuses on the actual elements of Nazi Germany as a cultural force, as opposed to just being their evil, but that's how you're going to get paid.
So when we talk about low-hanging fruit, is a lot of the pool actually taking code and then re-releasing it as their own.
Like what we do with Lassor?
Exactly. But we don't monetize, we don't monetize our mods, or what Rob does with Anno Domini with pretty much everybody else. That's the beauty of modding. Our mods are so interconnected, we all love each other a long time. We all get together and we reproduce these Frankenstein creations from hundreds of different people. I don't know, it's an interesting one, and especially if you look at Theft of Code and re-releasing it as your own, it draws some startling parallels to, say, movie piracy.
Well, let's talk about this for a second, because one of the things that has made colonialist legacies possible is what, under a monetization scheme, is what you call theft of code, but currently right now is called people getting together and learning. How much of my code came from Last Sword and Liuji? Originally, all of it. And one of the things that I've done, and I'm kind of sad that people haven't capitalized on it, was building the script to allow the Inuit to start on snowy terrain. I fully expect that if anyone build a northern civilization that is an ice-based civilization, that they should go and use my code.
That's what's been done.
Yeah, well, I mean, I even went during Christmas when the Santa Claus mod was out. I approached the guy that made the Santa Claus mod and said, hey, start in the North Pole. Like, seriously. Use my script. But if we're monetizing this, all of a sudden we start throwing around terms like theft of code, and I start saying, well, if you...
I'm saying that with, you know, heavy quotation marks around the theft.
But I think it is a thing.
You know, it's definitely a thing. But Bounty Misha, prolific anime civ modder, he came up with the point, and I'm not sort of saying I necessarily agree or disagree with it, but it is definitely a point. If I give a jacket to someone for free, and then I sell it at a flea market for $5, should I be upset? And I was saying before that it has those parallels to movie piracy, because although it's not technically stealing, because you can't technically steal a movie. For example, if I'm going to illegally download a movie, I'm not actually stealing from them, because I'm not actually taking anything away from the movie company. But the thing is, we like to justify the downloads and movie piracy because they're the big guys, you know, they already make enough money, so illegal downloading, that's fine. But then we also look on the other side of it, where we have independent movies that get popular torrent websites, and they're struggling to pay their crew food because nobody's actually purchasing them. And that's a parallel that I find with mods, essentially. Do you kind of see what I'm getting at here?
Yeah, the studios don't see it that way, that they make enough money.
Well, what I'm trying to say is that people like to get angry at Valve and Bethesda for taking a huge thing of the pie. They can justify it getting angry at them because they already make enough money. But as soon as modders want to make money, a lot of people start to get angry at them as well, when it's not justifiable.
There's another conflict that we haven't mentioned, I don't think. 2K believe that all mods are their property, essentially. So are Steam saying that all mods are their property?
And technically, typically, legally, yeah, the mod is property of the game developer, which is typically exists because that way there is a legal loophole to allow this sort of thing to even exist. First of all, it prevents me from modding the game and then selling it as colonialism, the game, right? Built by myself and T-Bang. That kind of a legal precedent is there for a reason and is probably a good thing. But what's interesting there then is I played a lot of World of Warcraft, and in World of Warcraft, selling game property for money is fraud. But at the same time, if Firaxis is going to sell, or Valve is going to sell mod components, components of a game owned by Firaxis for money, then what's the legal precedent there? It's a little bit of a convoluted one for sure.
Maybe what we could do is just, do you remember the Second Life stuff that came out years ago?
Yeah, still there.
You could buy a shop in Second Life and sell off
all sorts of stuff, yeah.
Furniture, which was essentially pixels. Certainly a couple of people made millions out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I don't think in any ways this is a threat to Civilization because...
Are you talking about the game Civilization or two?
Yeah. Oh, well, no, Civilization in general. No, I'm kidding. It's certainly, I don't see it as a major threat to Civilization the game because our community is rather strong.
Our community is already strong and already competitive, and we can already... It's that competitiveness that essentially makes us aspire for greatness. But it's not really, from a modder's perspective, the community or, like, the modern community that we're worried about. It's more of the consumers that we're worried about.
Particularly interested in Civ 5. Like, there's part of the community that's interested in Civ 3. So what happens when Civ 6 comes along and a whole new set of people start modding?
Mm.
That becomes back to a tabula rasa blank slate where anything could happen. And I mean, what happens when, God forbid, but when Civ 6 comes out and it's a free-to-play game where you pay for technology.
I'm seeing nightmarish things like that.
Don't say it three times in front of a mirror either. I'm not sure whether or not the statement in which he, you know, said that it's not going to be really going to be a threat to Civilization 5. I mean, maybe not the game, because it's been out for about 5 years. People are still going to love the games and the mods that have already installed, but future iterations of Civilization are probably going to be affected by this.
Well, and I'm going to actually go out on a limb here and make everyone hate me. In my opinion, the idea of modders being able to get money for making mods is a good thing.
Nobody's disputing you there.
It doesn't result in abusive habits, and it doesn't result in the customer getting shafted, the player getting shafted. I don't want to be fighting my end user. So to a large extent, I would actually say it's sort of a healthy thing, but I would like the sandbox where all of these kinks get worked out to be somewhere far away.
And it's something that I said before, like political ideologies, of certain political ideologies, the concept is great on paper. Who does not want to see a modder get incentivized for all the hard work and hundreds of hours that they're putting into a game? Paying modders is a great idea on paper. The execution...
Yes. You know, YouTube does require you to have advertisements in order to get money. So will Civ 5 eventually have advertisements? And are we going to change the name of Colonialist Legacy?
Yeah, I can just imagine that pop-up in-game, meet hot female leaders on your continent.
You're just trying to make me have nightmares, aren't you?
Yes.
You're like saying every word that's fine.
I won't believe it's one simple trick to get archaeologists.
Well, and this is the sort of the thing is, and who knows what the future is going to bring.
But didn't Xbox games have some games that have advertisement in there? Well, like a basketball game will have posters of products and whatnot, or... We saw that you bought this Civ. Well, why don't you go buy this Civ too, so they could fight each other, you know?
I wouldn't necessarily...
Download these 10 Civs, you won't believe Civ 4.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, download these 10 Civs, you won't believe what happened next.
Yeah.
The Beothic, you won't believe what happens to them.
And the Civ you never thought would come to Civ 5.
Blow your mind!
But the question is, if this thing does come for Civ 6, are Firaxis being told almost by 2K Games, there's some money to be made?
Oh, yeah, and I mean, that's...
So, you know,
you
set up Civ 6, so it's perfect for this new system on Steam, because we know that we can take some money from that.
I don't know.
By the way, I'll just retract it a little bit and just say I'm not saying that 2K games are more monetaristic than anyone else, but what I am saying is that these corporation people will say, hang on a minute, we'll jump on this bus here and we will test up the game.
You see money. Let's go.
So that it would, yeah.
I propose, do you want to implement this monetization scheme? The easiest and the best way and not piss off the entire community, do it exactly like a Humble Bundle slider. When you go to purchase something on Humble Bundle, you pay whatever you want. So if you want to pay $10 for all the games that you're going to get, you can choose exactly where your money goes. You can choose 5% goes to charity, 30% goes to the developer, 40% goes to the publisher via the Steam Workshop. Say if you got three major players, the modder, the developer, and Valve, if you set a minimum of like 20% each, you could potentially give an extra 35% to the modder or an extra 35% to Valve or the game's developer. So you can choose exactly where your money goes, because most people, I would wager, would think that artists and modders should get compensated for the work that they do.
I love the way that Humble Bundle's set up. And I mean, every time Civilization comes on a Humble Bundle or a Steam sale, I end up going to my social media outlets, Reddit, Twitter, whatever, and say to people, okay, you need to consider this because great deal for a great solid game, and it comes with all of these mods. I don't know how much I've sold Firaxis's games for them, but I definitely consider that. This game is so much bigger than what it was when they first released it because of the modding community. Yeah. A Humble Bundle style thing is a great idea, especially because one of the things that it could allow me to do as well, if depending on how much this is affected, you know, you could split it up and even say, depending on how many options you have, you know, this goes to the artists, this goes to the developers, because the artists and the developers of mods in Civ are not really the same thing. One of the things that could be great in a Humble Bundle-esque system is if we were to say, okay, fund us, and a portion of this is going to go to the people that this is a civilization of. Which could be incredibly good.
That's exactly what I was going to say as well. The Battle Royale, put very simply, is over on the Civilization subreddit. They chose, through a series of elimination, 42 civilizations that will represent them on a large-scale battle on Getemon's Yet Not Another Earth map pack, on the giant map. So, you know, you have the Inuit fighting against the pirates, fighting against, you know, Australia, fighting against Canada. It's great fun. But whenever a civilization gets eliminated, we donate money to a charity related to that civilization. So, for example, North Korea and Nazi Germany, they got eliminated first, so we donated to the Auschwitz Memorial, and we also donated to Liberty in North Korea. And so if we implemented something like that, and we encourage us as people to do the exact same thing, that could be definitely something that have a nice snowball effect.
That's a kind of a monetization I don't think that we'd have much of an issue with.
If we look at the strength of this community, and if we look at how interconnected we are as a people, we are still very competitive, but we still are very strong as a community, and we play off each other, and that's why we're so good. We have to ask ourselves, if monetization, paid mods, were a thing earlier on, would the community really be the same way?
Well, let's look at this scenario. I mean, it's already a problem to a certain extent where people get their noses bent out of joint when two civilization modders, Mexico.
Hashtag theft of ideas.
Hashtag theft of ideas. You know, people get upset whether or not there really is theft of ideas, and I'm not going to go there. But what happens then when we have four pay mods? The Anangu are coming out, and More Civs is building the Anangu, we're building the Anangu, somebody comes out of left field with the Anangu, and all of a sudden, we have, not only there's a race for the Anangu,
very interesting.
But some of these Civs, and I hate to pigeonhole a culture this way, there's something about this Civ is the only real way you're going to talk about the Civ. I don't think you can do a Beothic mod, for example, and not touch on Viking technology, and the access to Viking technology. I do not want to see death threats.
No.
In the Civilization 5 community.
So if we had a Nazi Germany mod, and JFD had a Nazi Germany mod, More Civs had a Nazi Germany mod, and they're all very high-quality civilizations, but then somebody on the workshop starts to monetize a lower-quality Hitler mod, but that gets lots of downloads. How do we feel about that? Would we feel ripped off? Is it justifiable that we feel emotional, like some sort of cognitive dissonance regarding that? Is that a cause to be upset? Is that a cause to be justifiably irate?
Maybe.
I don't know.
I think what I can see happening with that is that...
it's just like, I don't know how to react to that either.
No, I don't. But imagine this then. Civ 6 comes out, and all of a sudden the art assets are stripped from Civ 5 because every leaderhead fills a complete screen. So it's going to be portable into Civ 6, no matter what size of leaderhead to be, because you've got now a complete screen. So even if it was just a portion of the screen, you could take the relevance portion, size it down, whatever. But if it was a full screen, no problem, because they're already full screen. So, already, Civ 6 has a number of leaderheads that will be able to be instantly usable. If they then charge for that, because they'll have done everything else, do retrospectively, they owe people like Yan money. There's something that they've actually done, even though they did it for free, for a different game.
Unit models that we've used in Civilization 5 offer our Colonial Legacy mods. We've used models from users that have completely disappeared off the scene. And we've had this discussion before on modcasts of using other people's material in which they have disappeared and using it with or without permission. So if it does come, monetization can have a huge issue.
I don't know that the kind of modders that are going to be attracted by the concept of making $500 off of a Nazi Germany mod are necessarily going to see it the same way.
I agree that we're a tight bunch, but at the same time, as soon as money comes into it, it can actually change people.
Money is a great
It is amazing. And I would love that it would stay the same like you, but you know, I suspect that there might be one or two people that would actually change as a result of that. Especially if somebody made money out of somebody else's creation. That is a big thing.
I can imagine, because a lot of the community is in solidarity, so if one major modder, if one even minor modder, starts to monetize their mods, I would fear that a lot of other modders within the community would start to marginalize them and would start to have biases towards them and start to like treat them in a different manner.
Calling today, in North America the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, 44121-288-7659. That's 44121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
You can Skype us at the Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com. For more information on Modcast, our sibling shows Podcast, Revcast, Tivcast and Turncast, or about Polycast in general, log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
What mods do the Battle Royale use?
Starting from the top, we're using more Pantheons, more Luxuries. We're using Historic Era, which means that the game is a lot more drawn out. So we're up to, like, turn 310, and people are only starting to get their Great War Infantries. So it's a very sort of, it's longer than Marathon. It's Marathon speed, but with the production times of Standard. So lots and lots of units everywhere. We have Vietnam, Mexico, the Inuit, Canada, the Boers, Afghanistan, yet not another Earth's Map Pack. Yet not another Earth's Map Pack DLL with 43 civilizations. We also have the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, Stalin, Hannibal's Carthage, Norway, Hitler's Germany, Tojo's Japan, Louis XIV's France, Armenia, aggressive and expansive AI. You have faster plot expansion, Israel, barbarian immersion enhancement, Argentina, Gran Colombia, Chile, civ names by policies, randomized civ names, the Buccaneers, the Maori, the Ayyubids, India, Info Addict, Hittites, the Qin Dynasty, the Sioux, Mali, historical religions, in-game editor, Congo, North Korea, conquest, a unique unit. If you conquer a city of another civilization, it keeps the city art style, and you can produce a unit in that city that they've captured. We also have Australia, North Korea, the Khmer, at Khmer, and lots of other little tiny compatibility mods. Probably around 50, 55 plus.
That sounds like it, yeah.
Each turn takes around 3 minutes. We're getting to the point where I recorded up to, like, what, turn 327, and then the game crashed, so I tried to return from the autosave on turn 326, but that wouldn't load. The only save that would load was from turn 284, so I had to sit there for another couple of hours to wait to get back. And then also by that time, the AI did a completely different alternate history, so lots of different issues.
That sounds really good, though.
It's been kind of fun, at least for me. It's kind of like this Colonialist Legacies versus JFD versus Liuji kind of quality to the game, with the three major modders showing up in most of the modded civs. Of course, none of us really built hyper-aggressively, except for the Nazis.
Well, this has been Modcast 57. I hope you've all enjoyed it, and like just say thank you to our special guests today. So it's goodbye from me, R8XFT.
Steve Van Golan, also known as Jet.
Alpha Shark.
And this has been Narai the Forgiven, John.
And we still don't know that story of how you became forgiven. But there
I don't have enough time. Or
we've given you 3 hours, and you never mentioned it once.
Unbelievable.
It has nothing to do with civilization.
Really? So. Does it have everything to do with your wife?
No.
Just wondered.
You know, perhaps we should do a sister program called Jet Secrets or something, where people could come on and say, you know, how I became Nerai the Forgiven.
Yep, I'm just gonna mute my mic for a second. Don't you hear me eating the food?
Well, it would have been the highlight of the Modcast.
about 5 a.m. over here.
Yeah, it is very early.
I can tell by the tone of your voice. When we do eventually segue into the paid mods thing, do we have any solid talking points that we can really go over? Or should we just kind of ramble on?
We should ramble on, because that's what we're best at.
So if we,
that's not about four.
I do remember back when C5 was coming out and they were showing Rami for the Cyanese, and there were some people that were upset with the background art that they had this sculpture head of his.
Oh, right, yeah, Khmer.
And people were, you know, bothered by that. They wouldn't have it like that. You know, so even with the quote-unquote professional gun Civ, they could still upset somebody.
Oh, for sure. To a certain extent, I think many of us are more careful than Firaxis was.
Yeah.
But the Inuit are not in those treaties.
And neither are the Métis.
Yeah, the Métis. That's how you pronounce
it. Oh, the
Métis.
Oh, there we go.
I'd
like to see you pronounce some Aboriginal Australian names. Yeah.
I can't. I can't even. It's been a challenge enough to pronounce First Nations that I'm making. Rob, you had mentioned, you know, an hour ago that, of course, after editing it'll be 5 minutes, but hey. So that's all really good. All that is a joke, but you can remove this line in post-production. Better.
I think we've covered good ground. We've got about 3 hour recording, so I think that's good enough for the end.
And then,
so we can do a closing.
Yeah, do we want to wrap this up? Does someone else want to wrap this up?
Yeah. I think we're ready to wrap up, aren't we?
Fantastic.
I want to steal the microphone again. Not that I haven't spent like 3/4 of this thing talking.
Yeah, we noticed.
Yeah. That's the problem with having me on anything.
No, you did all the work. It's great.
Yeah, but you don't civilizations that thrive on fallout. Or
that would be so awesome.
Not with that attitude. Not with that attitude.
I know some players that would love that.
Well, this has been Modcast. Which episode are we on now? Is it 57?
I think it's 57. Yeah.
Insert number here, Daniel.
This has been great. Thank you all for inviting me.
It was fun.
Oh, it's been great having you. Thank you for coming.
Yes, great.
If you want another episode in which nobody talks, nobody else than me talks, you can definitely give me another shout at some point.
Yeah, that'd be great. We'll have that.
You might need to edit it in afterwards.
I even touch the editing. That's Dan's department.
That poor soul.
There you go, Dan. There's 4 hours. Get an hour out of that lot. Record date.
April 25th, 2015.
Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips. Copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.